I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and theantimedia.org. Super happy to be around. This May 3rd, 2017, in the midst of some of the most interesting times in the world, I would say. Lots of things to talk about tonight. We didn't do the show Monday because I was just too worn out to do the show on Monday. There's just so many things going on. But anyway, we're back tonight. We've got DB Schwartz back in the house. He missed a few shows because he's been busy getting around doing things too. A lot of things happening, a lot of things going on. Jake's working on a movie, and we're doing all kinds of things. But you know, we're back. And shit, guys, what are we talking about tonight? I don't really have anything particular planned. But there's, as always, just an enormous amount of information to go over. We'll never get to it all in 1 hour, you know. And that's why we've actually talked about increasing the length of the show to 2 hours. But you know, maybe not. China, North Korea, obviously the biggest issue of the day, I would say. And Hillary Clinton popping her head back out and blaming other people for her loss, while claiming to also have taken responsibility for it. But you know, Russian WikiLeaks is the big issue here, guys. Apparently,
it's anyway. Comey's fault.
Yeah, ooh, Kobe, Comey.
Comey, Comey, Comey.
Kobe Bryant or James Kobe? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Kobe Bryant too. I mean, who knows?
Kobe did it. Yeah, dude. So let's start talking about some of this stuff. We've also got our awesome journalist, Jake Anderson, on the line. What's up, Jake?
Hey, man. It's kicking tires.
Yeah, bunch of stuff happening. Jake, you wrote an article for us today. I mean, this stuff is just getting... it's getting ridiculous, right?
Yeah, man. Well, I have a big... big juicy steak coming your way soon, because I'm almost done with the next installment of 10 conspiracy theories that turned out to be true.
Nice.
And it's going to be better than the first.
All right, so let's talk about Hillary Clinton first, because, I mean, everybody's got a strong opinion on Hillary Clinton. Do you love her? Do you hate her? Do you really, really hate her? I think most people side with, like, we kind of hate her, and then, you know, we really hate her.
People still love Hillary Clinton?
Well, you know, maybe Jake does. I don't know.
Her supporters do. Her supporters love her even more now. They think of her as some, resistance warrior. It's just supremely ironic for her to call herself part of the resistance. Jim Carrey actually had Jim Carrey the activist, not the actor, had a great Facebook post today about that, with is that Hillary's actually the perfect example of the resistance, which is unprincipled, reactionary, and basically just waiting around to see who inherits the empire next. He worded it a little bit better than that, but essentially the resistance, it's whatever resistance she represents, it's just resistance to the latest incarnation of the alt-right Republicans. It's not a resistance to the corrupt financial institutions that have been looting the country. It's not a resistance to geopolitical wars for empire. It's not a resistance to the drug war. It's not a resistance to surveillance or the Patriot Act. It's not a resistance to Monsanto. It's not a resistance to any of the major issues that are defining our times. And so what is she exactly resisting? I think Claire summed it up pretty nicely, which is that the only thing Hillary Clinton is resisting is her own inner knowledge that the only one who cost her this election was herself. And Julian Assange responded even better today, saying, "All we did was post your actions in your own words. You have blame yourself."
Hey, to be fair, she's also resisting charges. You know, she's resisting jail time and stuff, so we don't want to forget about that.
Yeah, she has. She did somehow manage to avoid charges that would have probably put another person in jail.
Yeah. There's been several people, including military veterans military members, who have done similar actions to Hillary Clinton as far as what she did with all the classified info and her handling of classified information, which was by all measures illegal. But people have tried to invoke the same excuse, like, oh, well, I did the same thing Hillary Clinton did, therefore I shouldn't be punished. And those guys were convicted, So, it's pretty interesting that Hillary Clinton is now back on the scene, and, she thinks she's an activist. And, as you were saying, dude, I guess the resistance, who's leading it? I mean, is it Rachel Maddow?
It's George Soros.
Is it CNN? Is like CNN the resistance now? Is this what we're being sold?
Are we to believe
this bullshit that CNN and Donald Trump are actually somehow like ideologically opposed to each other? That to me is the biggest joke that's been played on everybody. The media loves Donald Trump, and everybody is being fleeced right now because we're sold this phony opposition.
It's controlled opposition, identity politics, it's identity politics masquerading as some kind of moral high ground, and it's controlled opposition, and it's everything that's wrong. I mean, Trevor Noah saying, F you if you're criticizing Obama for taking almost $1 million for Wall Street. Turning that into a race thing when clearly it's not a race thing. Clearly it's about people wanting, our elected officials to oppose the Wall Street industrial complex. And Trevor Noah would be considered part of the resistance. It's just this neoliberal identity politics bullshit carnival of self-importance and self-entitlement. And it's not getting to the heart of any of the real issues. And until people drop it and really start to answer some tough questions, make some tough decisions, we're never going to get out of this, ever.
Well, hopefully we can get out of it. But right now this country, you know, let me pull a quote out of this article here. This is by Josie Wales on the Anti-Media. Hillary Clinton says she's a hardcore activist now. That's the title of the article. So here's the quote from Hillary Clinton. I'm back to now being an activist citizen and part of the resistance. Quote. So Hillary Clinton believes she's an activist and that she's leading the opposition to Donald Trump. So, you know, here's the thing. From what we've been told and what the country, you know, the general belief around here, the general consensus is that Hillary Clinton genuinely is the resistance to Donald Trump. I mean, she was the one running against him in the 2016 election. Therefore, it's like, okay, well, obviously she should be the ideological opposite of Donald Trump, right? If they're running against each other, they should be different. But as we've come to see and find out, I mean, it was only, in fact, it may have been in the same interview where she made these comments, where she said, yeah, I agree with what Donald Trump did in Syria, which, in my opinion, has been the single biggest thing he's actually done so far. Everything else is just rhetoric, and none of the other crap that he said he was really going to do, most of that stuff has fallen flat from a policy standpoint. But the one thing that he has done, which is the one thing that he said he wouldn't do, is bomb Syria, and Hillary Clinton agrees with it. Not only did she, the same day when he did it, did she come out and say that's he should do it, but now following up in this most recent interview, she's saying, yeah, I do agree with what he did there. So, I mean, if Hillary Clinton is part of the resistance, what is she, like, opposing him on? I mean, according to this, to what she said, I mean, it's women's rights issues and inequality, unfairness, discrimination.
Well, he's a huge homophobe because he didn't start a fight with Russia, and Russia's, you know, is homophobic. So, of course, Donald Trump's not for LGBT, dude. It's messed up.
Yeah, Donald Trump hasn't really done very much on these fronts. You know, he is doing some things with religious freedom, which could implicate, you know, could affect some reproductive rights issues and stuff for women. But, of course, this is coming from my own biased standpoint. In my opinion, the biggest issue in this country is in fact not inside of this country, but outside of it, because in my opinion, the biggest issue is the empire. And so when Hillary Clinton comes out and says, yeah, I'm the resistance and I'm an activist, and the same day comes out and also says, oh yeah, well, I agree with what Trump did in Syria, well, then she's not the resistance. She's full of shit. And we were sold this bullshit. And you know what? Props to everyone out there who didn't fall for this shit. Because I know I've been, like, first of all, I never thought Trump was going to win. I thought it was going to be Hillary, you know, from day one. But the other thing is, props to the people who didn't fall for this fake difference. Because as much as Trump came off as like, oh, Trump's, you know, not a globalist, he's, you know, an anti-globalist, that's not the case. I mean, Trump is basically doing everything along the same planned lines as his predecessor did, you know, and that his successor will do after him.
He's just a globalist by default because he's a corporatist, and he wants multinational corporations to basically take over the world's resources, and him being the head of one of the most powerful. And, dude, they're making plans already, like, China's going to invest in Mexico. There's not going to be a wall, dude. There's going to be a North American Union before there's a wall, the opposite of what the people that voted for him think is going to happen.
So will this happen when he renegotiates NAFTA?
Yeah. So get your passport cards, people, because they're going to be like gold right now. You better get them right now.
So to that end, the real resistance, the real resistance we know damn well is what we're a part of, the ecosphere of agorists and anarchists and whatnot. But if we're going to say that there's a neoliberal mainstream resistance, surely we would say that it's Bernie Sanders heading it, because at least he is opposed to some of these larger financial institutions.
See, I think Bernie Sanders is the mainstream. Bernie Sanders is like the mainstream left version of the actual resistance. And then the true resistance is everything more radical than Bernie Sanders, basically.
And Bernie's truly powerless. So there's he's like a neutered pit bull, like with a nuzzle on him. Like, he can't do anything at all.
And I think he would have been that way as president too. Even the damn Democrats were opposed to universal health care and a lot of these things. Imagine him trying to push this stuff through two branches of Congress.
But imagine him trying to start any kind of war with his base. His base would start jam up DC as soon as these Syrian things would have started.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing. Like, when I say everyone more radical than Bernie, I mean, like, people on the far left, from like the socialists and the communists to the people that are like anarchists, people more into the center, like libertarians, and then people further to the right, which, you know, I'm pretty sure as Trump begins to let down his base, there's going to be more and more of a resistance from like the far right. Maybe let's say like the Rand Paul side of things, and also let's say, you know, the alt-right sooner or later starts defecting. But here's the thing, you know, what I'm seeing happen here with Trump is that he's almost done exactly what Obama did to the left in ways that I'm having trouble still trying to explain it fully, but now I'm seeing it happen. It's not that so many libertarians or even anarcho-capitalists are Trump supporters, but they are definitely susceptible to his message and to his base, and stuff. I mean, just, it's probably mostly just demographics and stuff like that, identity politics and that kind of thing. But regardless, it's happening. You know, it may be dumb reasons why it's happening, but it's happening. And, you know, it really is, what's happening here is how the same way Obama came into power and silenced the anti-war left, and the anti-corporate left, Trump has come in and silenced the anti-big government right, you know what I mean, and the anti-globalist right. He's kind of just
hurt them. Our government is now bigger than it's been in our history. We have an official military budget of $667 billion, and that was way more than last year with all the so-called social programs Obama spent. We've gone up $30 billion, and that's just on paper. So I can only imagine what the black budget's got to be $3-4 trillion a year at this point. And it's because we've cornered every black market there is, and we've monopolized every dirty thing there is. And that's what WikiLeaks is brought to the table.
The Fed itself can generate enough profits to fund anything you could imagine. You know what I mean?
The Fed itself as a business entity is about 10% of the global GDP privately.
Crazy, man. Crazy. So, yeah. Anyway, you know, these guys are all kind of, you know, Trump is now obviously kind of this neoliberal kind of neocon kind of, okay, I'm like slightly to the right on like some issues, and I say crazy shit to rile up my base, and that shit is not going to happen. They just cut a deal on the budget, right? The budget doesn't have funding for him to build his wall. You know, the funding doesn't have a lot. It doesn't, you know, take Obamacare, repeal Obamacare, replace Obamacare. Like, basically what's going on here is Trump isn't really doing any of the stuff that he promised the people that got him elected. And sooner or later, that's going to start reflecting in his true kind of active support base. Because what I can see happening is, you know, the media is going to soften up on Trump. In fact, they already have, in a large part, the media softened up on Trump. I haven't heard much of the Russia stuff going on outside of Hillary Clinton's comments. The Russia story, the Russia narrative, the Putin placed Trump in power. That narrative is kind of just evaporated. It's kind of gone now. Ever since Trump bombed Syria, it kind of got rid of that, you know, story. And ever since he's been trying to start up a huge war with North Korea, all that's gone. So I can see Trump's base shifting. Like, I can see his base shifting from this far, like, alt-right kind of activist, right-wing nationalist, you know, maybe white nationalist leaning base. And now it could be shifting with the media coverage. They start softening up their coverage on Trump. He can start embracing more of a traditional Republican, maybe like neoconservative base. And that's kind of where he'll settle in his presidency, I think. And so it'll be just slightly right on social issues. He'll be pretty much, you know, right down the, you know, just in line with everybody else on foreign policy, which is just grow the foreign policy, make the empire bigger. And then he'll be just slightly right on economic issues. But the big differences are in rhetoric. It's the policy differences are small, but the differences in rhetoric are huge. And so Trump is able to try to continuously polarize his base and energize his base and get people riled up because, oh yeah, we're gonna try to repeal Obamacare. Elect me again and we'll for sure get Obamacare repealed this time. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we're probably gonna hear. And you know, Trump already released his first reelection ad. You know, and so that stuff is already getting started. Unfortunately,
the douche party.
And from what I can tell, there's no third-party challenge going on here. The Democrats are in complete disarray. The Republicans are actually, you know, the Republicans, I think, stand in starker contrast than the mainstream Democrats and the mainstream Republicans, because you got that Freedom Caucus, and I think they're more they're unforgiving, and they're like they're not willing to bend too much from their principles. And so those guys, I feel like the Freedom Caucus, which is made up of those kind of extremely conservative, libertarian leaning Republican members of Congress, they seem to have a little bit more of a principled stand. And then you got several over on the left, which I don't know, I would probably lump Bernie Sanders in together with Tulsi Gabbard, but that's very, you know, only two people that I can name right off the top of my head. I know there's another one. I know there's a few more, but I can't name them.
Tulsi's probably the only person that can actually mount a challenge against Trump, and because she was a vet, if it comes to where we get into a war, and let's face it, dude, if we get into war and things spiral out of control and it hits home and a lot of people here eat it, then Trump's probably not going to be able to get reelected, even if he tries to do something stupid like martial law. And she could definitely get in, and she's been shown to be anti-empire and pro-defense. Like, she was saying, all of our aircraft carriers should be transferred to the Coast Guard. We should stop doing any of our force, you know, expansion for corporate empire and commercial empire. We don't need it. Like, it's the dumbest thing in the world what we're doing right now. We could give everybody here all the tools they need to compete, and we don't need to steal resources.
I mean, the Navy has a legitimate purpose in defending the coastline and protecting trade routes, but the Navy doesn't have a legitimate purpose in knocking over governments and toppling, I don't know, let's say North Korea, for what reason? I still haven't found a good reason for anybody to talk about toppling North Korea. So, I mean, there is
It's to protect our interests, Nick, because if North Korea and South Korea were ever to unify, they'd actually probably be a threat to Japan economically. And, well, if you study history, you know we're kind of Japan's biatch, so we have to do what they say.
That's an interesting way of putting it. Yeah, dude, you know, a bunch of crap going on with North Korea. So we're going to start from the top. I mean, we haven't been on the air for, you know, about a week, so there has been a lot of stuff. The top story right now on the antimedia.org, which, by the way, is I'm super happy with the new site rebuild, and it's just it's so smooth and slick, and it's just we're churning out lots of content here. And the crowd, I've been noticing that there's a lot of organic upvotes and downvotes. Thank you to everybody listening tonight who has been, you know, helping us, because, you know, that's part of it, man. Like, we can't collect all the news on our own. We're just a handful of people on a limited budget with limited resources. We can't go and find all the news around the world that matters, so we need your help, which is why we have the My News section where people can post links and we'll get them up on the site. And if other people find them interesting, they get upvoted and it gets to the front page. You know, this is how the news is spreading. And you know what? We're trying to work away from Facebook because Facebook is a gatekeeper. And Google, and then, I mean, I don't know if you guys have been seeing this stuff. We've been posting it on our site, but Google is putting, like, several mainstream media, Washington Post, New York Times, people in charge of fact-checking links. So when you, like, do a Google search for, like, a search query and then, like, articles come up that you can click on, there'll be like a little fact check thing, and like New York Times and Washington Post are fact checking these articles. This is very concerning. Facebook just hired, a New York Times veteran to basically put in charge of policing fake news, or what they deem fake news. So, like, the issue here is that you got people connected to New York Times, Washington Post, these big media outlets. Even CNN is listed as one of the fact checkers on Facebook. These companies.
No InfoWars, though?
Yeah, no. Well, InfoWars is not fact checking. They should be, though. If you're going to include CNN, you might as well include InfoWars. You know what I'm saying? Like, the thing is.
No Young Turks?
It's a huge conflict of interest to have other news companies going around deeming what is and isn't fake news. I mean, obviously, people are going to – these are for-profit corporations. They're going to start saying, oh, well, anyone who is competing against me, anybody who criticizes me – I mean, we run articles that are critical of these outlets all the time, New York Times, Washington Post, CNN. I mean, just in the past week, we've probably posted five or more stories about any number of these outlets, critical of their coverage or critical of something they've done, conflicts of interest, things like that.
Dude, it's the new manufactured consensus. You just posted today about how Google and Facebook combined are controlling, you know, what percentage of ad revenue. I mean, they are just as much of a force of censorship as any government.
They're way more so, like in the U.S. Yeah. Anyway.
Except the average person doesn't see it like that. They're used to hearing censorship and thinking of a government, you know, blocking Twitter or something like that. In America, censorship is far more of a fluid exchange between the State Department and private corporations, very much part of the deep state. And it's very much a manufactured consensus, and it's a psychological operation as well. It's you know, how much can we mess around with their algorithm without them complaining? And you know, it's deeply, yeah. Deeply concerning for any independent web publisher out there.
Yeah, dude, and this really brings up some interesting conversations about privatized censorship that many people don't like talking about, but it is a really interesting subject because we, you know, especially for me, I'm anti-regulation. I don't think the government should be involved in the economy and stuff like that. I'm an anarchist. Like, I believe in regulation, but it should be done by the people, not by a government entity which can choose a loser and a winner. But at the same time, look at the issue we're dealing with here with Google and Facebook, where, you know, any information that may wind up being critical of a government can wind up being censored. Right. And so these companies already work with the governments of, like, China and Russia and other, and, you know, Turkey, places where they want to censor certain things, Saudi Arabia, Israel. these companies already work with these governments where they say, oh, well, we're going to help you guys censor stuff whenever you need it to, you know, happen, as long as you let us operate in your country. You know, and so is Google going to say, well, we're not going to accept, you know, we can make, you know, $50 billion this year from Israel, but we have to, whenever they want, we have to censor Palestinian activists' Facebook accounts, or we have to take down their website, you know, links out of Google. Are these companies going to say, yeah, no, let's just like sacrifice that $50 billion because we have principles. We're not going to stand for censorship. No, that's not what they do. They work with these governments and they do what they want. Now in the U.S., because we do have this, you know, the court system and all that stuff, you know, these companies can fight the orders if they want. But let's face it, these companies, what are they going to do? Allow themselves to go out of business to protect your privacy or whatever, or to stand against censorship? No, they may fight it in court, but when it comes down to it, they're going to do what the government says because they want to make money. You know, and so what we have going on here, it may not be censorship in the way that we think of it, but it is censorship in the way that these companies, even though they're private companies and everyone consents to using them, they are accomplices to censorship, to governments and stuff like that. And they've got such a huge market share, like Facebook, it's so big. And because of like the network effect and all that, it's just so big, it captures everything that you can't really escape it. And if even if you did, well, what are you going to do? You're going to talk to yourself on a website that nobody knows about, that nobody follows, because Facebook doesn't allow it to be shown on Facebook? I mean, and Google doesn't allow people to find it on Google? How is anyone going to find out about it? You're going to go passing out flyers and business cards? I mean, for a website to be financially viable, you need a lot of traffic, and you're not going to get it by handing out business cards. You got to be able to reach people on Google and Facebook and Twitter and all these companies. And that's where this new censorship is going. It's been privatized, and it's very similar to the way that the NSA has privatized a lot of its, you know, a lot of its surveillance, you know. Edward Snowden, at the time when he leaked, when he went to Hong Kong, I believe it was, and when he decided to leak all that information to Glenn Greenwald, he was employed by a private contractor. He was no longer working with the NSA or the CIA. You know, he was working with a private contractor. So, you know, surveillance has been privatized. Censorship is being privatized right now. And there's been a lot of stuff on YouTube. I've seen so many of my friends, acquaintances, people I know in the industry, in the independent media industry, getting their YouTube videos demonetized. Like, censorship right now is running rampant and nobody even realizes it. All this stuff about fake news and all that stuff, it's all part of it. And like, what we're dealing with right now is maybe the biggest censorship push that I've definitely ever witnessed in my time in this industry, but also in my life. I've never noticed censorship like this, but it's happening right now like crazy. And the internet is the new frontier. The internet is the growing platform where information is being spread, and the censorship is being taken care of right now before it gets too bad. I mean, before these outlets get too big. You know, and of course we're experiencing it too. Facebook does not like sending traffic to our website. We still get traffic from Facebook, but it reluctantly, you know. And so that's why we built the new site out as the homepage of independent media, so people don't have to find us through Facebook. Go straight to our site. It's a social news site. Upvote, downvote, send us links so that we can check them out, have them published, and even have our writers write them, you know. Because these gatekeepers, these gatekeepers are going to be the downfall of the internet. Like, they're going to make the internet shit, and we have to be very, very careful. I mean, Snowden has warned about this stuff, and he's called for a federation of smaller social media organizations instead of these big behemoths like Facebook and Google. Right now, like the thing that people should be doing is finding ways off of Facebook and off of Google. Because if we continue to allow them to be the gatekeeper and continue to allow them to get super advanced with their censorship, we're in for some really bad times of suppression and oppression. And by the time we know it, fascism, dictatorship take over, we're not even going to know because it'll be that bad. You know what I mean? Like, it's already bad.
It's already there, man.
Yeah.
It's here already and no one knows.
I mean, the amount of power vested in the deep state right now is to the point where, I mean, it would take generations. It'll take the next two to three generations to dismantle this kind of power, even if it's possible. And, you know, with the new technologies coming out, for example, the brain implants, that will open up, you know, new promise and new peril. It's going to bring a whole new equation to it, but it's just going to be this ongoing fight. But yeah, you're right. I mean, right now the battle, the front lines are the internet and the control for information. And, you know, we just have to hope that with enhanced cognition, humans can see past this. And, you know, but...
The collateral damage is absolutely atrocious to this control grid. I know both you guys know all about the whole emphasis being put on child trafficking and everything like that, and that's part of it. But it's almost any illicit activity that you wonder why and how it can even exist and how these people aren't immediately brought down and just taken out, not even... You know, there was a FBI guy, I can't remember his name, but you can Google it, or better yet, DuckDuckGo or something else. Use some other search engine, but there was an FBI guy who was just... What was that?
I said DuckDuckGo that shit.
Yeah, exactly. There was an FBI guy who was just convicted of child molestation. He got a one-day sentence. So these fools protect each other. There has to be a civilian-controlled oversight committee that has the final say on sentencing. One day is ridiculous. He should have got life. Everybody should get life, or probably the death sentence if it's something real bad. I mean, you can't let these people out ever. So the fact any of these things happen is because they're part of the black economy, the black market economy. They need to establish the control grid for me and you. So they have total control. They can live like gods, and we're going to live like, well, I don't know, man. Not good. It
goes back to, you know, what we were talking about with this corporate censorship. Like, these really sensitive stories, they get censored, dude. Like, if you post these stories that are about some real messed up things going on, Facebook won't allow them to go out. I mean, even the Abu Ghraib photos. You guys remember when Facebook took those down and then Google went through and demonetized any article that was about Abu Ghraib, which was, for those not familiar, it was one of the, just an area of like mass torture and horrible things done by U.S. forces in Iraq. All the articles were demonetized. And now when we post articles that are about really sensitive things, like let's say it's, the U.N. human trafficking ring that was just... the UN peacekeepers that were involved in human trafficking in places including Haiti and other places around the world. Well, when I publish a story on that, the Google ad on our website wouldn't show up.
Dude, we should do an article listing all the...
It was too sensitive, and it's like, well, Google doesn't really give you an explanation. The ad just never shows up. And it's something where they say, well, on certain articles and certain topics, we're just not going to allow anybody to make money off of it. And therefore, why is anyone going to pay somebody to write an article on a subject that you can't make any kind of money on? I mean, not that we only write stories to make money, but everybody that works for us obviously gets paid. And like, it's this underhanded censorship too. It's this demonetization going on YouTube.
Dude,
And anyway,
I'm going to start working on an article about this corporate free market censorship.
Yeah, dude, we need to put this out there because this has gotten bad. Like, we need to make this the new fake news.
And ANCAPs should be on board with this because this is this is a form of crony capitalism. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, this is privatized censorship in the worst case, you know, the worst way to do it.
This is an issue we could build a coalition on, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, also a lot of the alt-right people are the ones dealing with the most censorship right now, you know, because they talk about some really, and believe me, I disagree with 99.8% of the stuff they talk about, but they talk about some really extreme shit, and as bad as it is, you know, it doesn't deserve to be censored. Unless you're calling for violence or advocating to kill people, you know, like it shouldn't be censored. So, you know, I think you're right, man. Like this is an idea that it's a topic that could build a coalition around. That'd be interesting.
That would be an article in and of itself. 5 or 10 issues that the alt left and the alt right could form a coalition on.
Yeah.
War.
Because you know what, dude? Like, it just makes me sick and sad. And this, I've been talking about this recently with some of my personal friends and stuff, just about how these guys, and I saw it going on May Day, on May 1st. Shout out to the labor movement and all the things you guys have done. But on May Day, I saw it, dude. You know, the anti-fascists and the alt-right going out in the streets and like teeing off on each other and beating each other up.
Can
guys, demographically speaking, they're like identical people. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're all young, middle class or working class males that are whooping each other's ass in the street because they all have political frustration.
And Nick,
they're not fighting any good fight or righteous fight. They're only fighting against each other, and they're accomplishing nothing.
They're all college educated. It's just like the dudes who are employed are like the freaking, you know, obviously trying to fight for their overlord that got in. But I mean, dude.
It's so frustrating to see people who are the young fighting age people who we need in any movement.
They're getting them ready, right? They're getting them all riled up.
Yeah, to see them fighting each other instead of fighting against the state or the bigger issue or fighting for a solution. And this is textbook divide and conquer shit. Like, I hate to be the one to say it again, but I'm sure this has been said a million times. But this alt-right, alt-left, you know, hey, guys, let's divide you apart, even though you're almost identical demographically, and have you fight each other instead of fighting us. That's brilliant. I mean, if I was the guy that was in charge of shit right now, that was jacking everybody for who knows how much money every year, trillions of dollars probably, I would be doing the same thing. I would say, damn, this group of people is probably the group that could most likely threaten me. Well, let's neutralize it by splitting it in half and turning it against itself. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening, dude.
Let's tell this group that everything is offensive so they won't even do anything.
Yeah.
Dude, everything's offensive to the point now where no one will have real dialogue between different groups because they're afraid to offend and that is the ultimate divide and conquer right there. They've made political correctness the ultimate divide.
And the political correctness crap, it like defeats itself kind of, because it's like the people who are like extremely politically correct, they can't really express themselves how they'd like to because the language that they'd like to use doesn't even exist, because language is genderfied or whatever you call it, gendered like a mother. Like I just used gendered language, right? So, like, language is gendered as hell. And then on the other hand, on the alt-right, You got people who are so against political correctness that they're so extreme in purposely trying to offend people that no one even wants to talk to them because it's like, this guy's a total asshole. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you got people who can't communicate because they can't even use the words that are in our language because they're too offensive. And then you got the people who only use the words in our language to offend people, and they cancel each other out. Like, it's
they've broken down communication, which is, you know, like you said, divide and conquer. But it's at the point now where I don't see how it can be rectified. I mean, the friction and the animosity is so great right now.
Some places it's not that big of a deal, but like even here where it's a very modern, diverse city, you can feel some friction, man. And I'm sure it's less on the coasts, but there's unresolved issues in the interior of the country for sure.
It's like the testing ground of this PSYOP, I think, going on. And not that that would be anything new, right? That's like where it used to happen back in the day, too. Back in the 60s and shit. You know, where they were doing the LSD experiments and shit like that. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Berkeley is just a testing ground for these crazy fucks over in Silicon Valley trying to game up some data for some algorithms or some shit, dude. Like, the way these guys play with us.
Well, yeah, they're actively trying to develop algorithms to predict where outbreaks of violence will occur. So you're right, this could very well be a
you know, a lot of these guys are being shipped in, like, into Berkeley and stuff. From both sides, you know, and so
whatever the reason, you're right. All it's doing is obfuscating and making it impossible to truly wage a real opposition to the real enemy. You know,
and do you notice where they're stuck?
So intricately that not only have they ideologically divided people, but with the very language that people use to communicate, it's become like so divisive that the language doesn't even like compute in other people's heads. So it's like people from the alt-right, I'm not even sure that they'd be able to communicate with someone who you would classify as like alt-left, because it would just be, I don't know, dude, like it's, I've never seen anything like this. They've been so successful, like right under our noses. They've kind of reprogrammed us in a way where we can't even reconcile. The far left and the far right can't even reconcile anything because they can't even talk to each other anymore. Crazy. Crazy how effective this propaganda has been.
What it did do is, like, we'd be going to different things around Bernie Sanders' campaign that eventually led into different, I guess you could say, alt-left, but not Antifa-based, more like, I guess you could say, a socialist bent, where we know that this universal income and this automation and robotic revolution on the cusp is going to change things, or else they're just going to wipe out people. So let's not let it go that way, you know?
Yeah, and you know, even the basic income has got support across towards the libertarian end of things with Zoltan, who we've had on the program, who Jake has interviewed.
Yeah, he's running for governor of California under the libertarian ticket. I'm gonna interview with him at some point.
I was just thinking about how crazy it would be if Zoltan actually won, bro. Imagine that'd be so cool to have Zoltan as our governor. Like,
dude, I'd have like a first seat row interviewing him. I mean,
Elon Musk could just take over California, and I'd be okay with it.
I don't think there's a chance in hell of it happening, but he's got a much better chance than running for president, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, veritably an ANCAP, certainly a strong libertarian, but even he supports a universal basic income because he just straight up said, you know, like if you take truckers' jobs away from them, if you take working class people's jobs away from them, there's going to be riots in the street.
He's basically a right-wing anarcho transhumanist.
Yeah.
Which is a very, you know, it's a very interesting political standing, which I'm starting to find myself a little more susceptible to this idea of automation and robots, and you know, hell, maybe we don't need to do all these crazy jobs. But I think the big conversation is, you know, what comes next? Because think about
it's hard not to look at whether can we hack the human mind. I mean, he believes that we're going to have the technology to rewire and hack the human mind, and we're seeing right now the limitations of our own biological evolution. You know, who's to say it's not going to be necessary to kind of, you know, rewire, reset a little bit? I'm not saying to manufacture people the way we want them. The idea is to let people be in control of their own source code. And who's not going to aim for enhanced cognition, enhanced awareness? Well, with enhanced awareness and enhanced cognition, I think naturally is going to come a state of equilibrium that more people will be at than they would be at now.
Hopefully, man. You know, and I've got a few friends on Facebook who are like huge Linux users because it's open source and you own your own software. Like, you know, apparently the software you have on your computer, it's licensed and, you know, you technically don't really own it. And it's like Linux is open source and it's free, and it's like Windows and the Mac operating systems, they're based on Linux. But Why do most people use Windows and most people use, you know, the Mac stuff? And you know, that's going to be the big question. I've seen people raise that. I've seen people raise this issue here, is about having licensed technology inside of your head. Like that's a pretty scary thing, right? So, I think the way to be successful and avoid this like Orwellian future is to go open source with all this crazy artificial intelligence technology and all this hardware, transhumanist hardware and stuff. You know, going open source with it is what we should be like wanting to do, because if not, we're going to be in a place where there's going to be a bunch of monopolies that control different parts of the licensing of the software and hardware. And you're going to be forever indebted to them, basically. You know, and so that is not something good. And as we're seeing right now, we were just talking about Google and Facebook. These are two of the companies that are the ones dumping the most money into advancing this artificial intelligence technology. So they definitely plan on patenting and licensing all of this stuff that they find.
Right. And for the record, Cory Doctorow and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they're really leading the way on trying to open up the, you know, proprietary system. They want to take on the DMCA, and they obviously see the future in terms of what's going to happen in terms of these smart devices and proprietary you know, information that's in our head, and they want us to be able to basically jailbreak that technology and use it the way we want it, instead of being beholden to their patents. So they're way ahead of the game on that. The question is whether there's a chance in hell of stopping the corporatocracy on this issue.
Yeah. And this is the big topic, I think, that we should be discussing. Because, you know, what I was going to say is, think about the Industrial Revolution. And, you know, when they moved up from, like, the windmill-powered machinery to steam-powered machinery, and like that basically is what led to the Industrial Revolution. Everything changed from there, man. Like shit went from like people, the population centers moved from like rural farming populations to like urban city populations in a very, very quick amount of time, very short amount of time, right? And the way that was super revolutionary. And even the way that we think that the internet has been pretty revolutionary, like we haven't seen anything yet. Like when this AI stuff takes over, it's going to be like the Industrial Revolution all over again. And everything, the entire structures of our societies are going to have to be rearranged. And this isn't like a prospect where we're talking, oh yeah, in a couple hundred years. No, we're talking like in 30 years from now, this stuff is all going to be reality, and barely anybody wants to talk about it, and it's definitely not being talked about politically. in the mainstream anyway.
Yeah, they're pretending like jobs are going to come back, and they probably will in a short amount of time for a small amount of people. But, like, dude, we have a huge excess of population. And what are we going to do, man, when there's really literally not anything for them to do? Just stay in school until they get, like, a PhD in something? I mean, what? I don't know what's going to happen.
Basically, there's going to be a bunch of people. There's going to be very few jobs as far as jobs that we know exist today. Now, of course, the economy will transform and there'll be other jobs to be had for human beings. I'm not saying that all jobs are going to be gone, but a lot of what we know of that are jobs right now are not going to exist in 30 years. In fact, I'd say most jobs that we know of right now, people that work at fast food restaurants, people that work in delivery, people that drive, people that work for Uber, people, Walmart's, and you know, Walmart's one of the biggest employers in the country. Walmart probably won't be around in 30 years if it keeps going the way that it's going right now. And if it is, it won't be, have human workers working in it. You know, so a lot of these jobs are going to be completely gone. There'll be different jobs, but there'll be many fewer labor jobs, manual labor. And it's just not being talked about. I mean, not even Bernie Sanders really talked about this, you know, and Trump, Bernie Sanders and Trump, similar as they are on some economic things, they didn't talk about it.
Yeah, it's because no one knows what to say. It's a massive bomb that's about to go off, and no one really knows how we're going to deal with it or what the collateral damage is going to be. It's going to completely change, like you said, completely change human society. And
I think one way to look at this stuff would be like an egalitarian look at it, where you have, and you know, we've talked about this before, where you have kind of collective ownership of the machinery, which of course starts looking, you know, bordering on socialism and stuff. But I don't know, man. Like, all these jobs are going to be gone, and we're going to get to a point where people either eat or they die.
Some form of collectivism is going to be necessary when there's so few jobs, and anarcho-capitalism seems unrealistic now. I mean, imagine anarcho-capitalism when you're talking at the age of automation and artificial intelligence. I mean, it simply won't even, you know, it's incomprehensible. You would have 0.01% of the population controlling, most of the resources. It's just not. The very idea of ownership is going to change.
That's kind of how it already is. Even though the robotic takeover hasn't even happened, we already got 1% control of the whole thing already.
Right.
Before we run out of time, Jake, should we go over tomorrow? You're going to have Bros on?
Yeah, Derek Bros should be on tomorrow. I know he's taking a social media break, so I'm emailing him. But yeah, he should be on. So, and we'll be talking about, you know, freedom cells, agorist communities, and I'm going to talk about the future with him. You know, what we're talking about now, I'm interested to get his take on that in the future.
Talk to him about what you and me talked about here when you were visiting too, if you can.
And we're going to have a special third hour, actually. We got LDs on after Jake, so if you want to stay on, that'd be cool.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, cool.
3 hours, dude. Hell yeah.
3 hours.
3 hour marathon tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Anti-Media Radio. We're going to be back Monday. Join these guys tomorrow night. And, I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
You're listening to UCY.TV. Why don't you stick around for more awesome radio?